We welcome you to join us on the porch. Today's show is made possible by VRC Limited. Grab a coffee or a cool lemonade and join our host, Randy Voller, for a slice of life from the perspective of one of Chatham County's most actively engaged community leaders, former mayor, real estate developer, musician, and all-around great guy. Now, here's Randy.
Welcome to another episode of On the Porch. We still have Dr. Frank H. Russell with us on the porch. Frank, it is great to have you here.
Very happy to be here again, Randy. Thank you very much for having me.
We are pleased that you're still with us. Our last show, we were kind of talking about your personal biography and how you got to the point where you were going to be a doctor and kind of the aging process. So let's recap a little bit. You were talking about your father, who was a doctor and practiced till he passed in 1955. And I asked you the question of what's it like to be a senior. It was going to be 95 on April 23rd, living down here in Pittsburgh now. What is it like to go through that process of aging when you used to have patients yourself that were experiencing it and now you're living it?
Well, I don't find it too difficult to be a patient. I understand the process pretty well. I'm not angered or upset by difficulties or change of life or things, because I've learned to adapt, which my father taught me, to adapt very quickly and very well. I've learned to transcend problems, to transcend emotion, to control my emotions. As a surgeon, that was very necessary.
So give us an example when you were a surgeon when it was really necessary for you to control your emotions and transcend.
Well, without going into specifics, I remember a number of cases which were very difficult, particularly with children, having to do things that had to be done for their care. Had I been an emotional weakling, I could not have done those things. And it was that ability to transcend what I'm doing for their lives that allowed me to do that. And without crying. Many times I felt like crying. I didn't have that privilege. I cry a lot now. I don't have to worry about it anymore.
So let's just go back in time a little bit to that point where you were getting out of medical school and starting your career. Do you have any strong thoughts about those experiences in medical school? I mean, back in the golden era, you know, 1958 is when you graduated. What do you remember?
Most of what I remember in med school was I was so glad to be there because it took me so long to get there. I enjoyed med school immensely. I know it. My father died my first year there, but I know it made him happy that I went, and he wanted one of his sons to be a doctor. So I'm glad I was able to do that. But I enjoyed medical school because I wanted it for so long. The day I decided to be a doctor, I was watching my father do an autopsy. And I decided then, Dad, I want to be a surgeon. Nothing else ever entered my mind after that.
So you once told me you made extra money at med school going in and working with dead bodies and pathologists and going to the morgue. Talked about that.
Well, I happened to make a friend in med school, Robert Tebow, Dr. Tebow. He was a coroner in Memphis and one of the professors of pathology. And we got to be friends for some reason. I don't know. I liked him. He liked me. He was also very attracted to my wife, Leslie's mother.
Well, that helped things.
She was a beautiful girl. But in any event, he knew all medical schools, all medical students need money. You know, it's expensive. And though I had the GI Bill, I still had a little time to make extra money. So he used to let me do autopsies at $25 a throw to go over to the lab and do autopsies for his office. And that helped.
Was there ever one that was particularly interesting? I mean, was he sitting there eating a sandwich like you see on the TV shows while you're doing the work?
Well, it used to quite amaze me. I'd be sitting there doing an autopsy with the body pieces all over the place. eating a sandwich, having lunch as you would in a restaurant, and thinking nothing about it.
Had they started everything after a while? They started the body farm in Tennessee to study when you were there, or is that later?
Yeah, that was later on. One summer, I did an externship in Knoxville when I had a 3-month break. And I worked at a Baptist hospital there and got to work over there in that farm where they had bodies exposed to see what happens over a period of time with a body in the field as to the bacteria, the invasions of insects, etc., to determine
as it decomposes.
Decomposition. To determine how or why the body got there. It was very interesting, and it was a new thing, and now it's quite popular.
Now it's kind of old hat.
Yeah.
But at that time, it was cutting edge.
That was revolutionary then.
And it's still in existence.
Yeah.
So after you left Tennessee, you decided that you were going to practice medicine like your father in New York, and you ended up at Bellevue.
I went back to Bellevue Hospital for my internship. I did a year as a first-year surgical resident there. And then an opportunity came to go down to Beekman Downtown Hospital, which is a very nice hospital in Lower Manhattan, where I went down there for my second, third, and fourth year of residency and chief resident. And much to my surprise and to my great luck, I was made chief in my third year, which is almost unheard of. So for 2 years, I was chief surgical resident, which is a wonderful position to be in here. You have a lot of power as a chief surgical resident. And you have an opportunity to learn and do a lot of surgery. And I learned better by doing than by reading.
And so you did a lot of surgeries. I mean, you've often told me you just jumped in 2 feet.
I never turned down the opportunity to walk into the OR at any time, no matter how tired I was or how much work I'd been doing. I'd love to be the OR.
Is this when you made the decision that you would be a trauma surgeon?
Well, that's one of the reasons I went to Beekman, because that was one of the places where the chief of trauma, Dr. Robert Kennedy, was a noted trauma surgeon. I went down there to train under him, and I did. And
why did you want to be a trauma surgeon?
Elective surgery is fun and challenging, but nothing is as challenging as trauma. It's multiple system problems, complications, and it comes at 2 a.m. It's just very exciting and very challenging. I liked that, and I was well trained for it.
Was it at Beekman or Bellevue that you worked under a resident who ended up writing the book on surgery?
Oh, my chief resident at Bellevue, Bill Nolan, wrote a wonderful book called The Making of a Surgeon, which came to my attention when I saw him being interviewed on a Johnny Carson show one day.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I said to my wife, oh, that's Bill, my ex-chief at Bellevue.
We'll be back with The Making of the Surgeon after the break.
You're listening to On the Porch with Randy Voller, made possible by VRC Limited. Welcome back to On the Porch. Randy Voller and his friends bringing local flavor with zesty conversation. Come on up and grab a chair.
Welcome back on the porch. We're here with Dr. Frank Russell. So, Frank, we were talking about the chief resident you worked under, Dr. Nolan.
Bill Nolan.
Bill Nolan, who wrote The Making of a Surgeon, which became a rather famous book.
Bestseller.
And you actually worked under him.
I worked under Bill for 2 years.
And then you went over to Beekman.
And I went to Beekman, yes.
Why did you go to Beekman?
Well, it was apparent that at Bellevue, to get to be chief, you went up so many years, and then instead of progressing in line, it became not a pyramid, but a triangle. And you could be there 5 or 6, 7, 8 years before you got to be chief. And I just was already older. I didn't want to wait that long. So I found the opportunity and heard of an opportunity at Beekman that they had only foreign residents at that time. I was one of the first American graduates that they had as a resident for many years. They had a wonderful staff and an excellent teaching staff. And so the opportunity came, and I took it.
So
it was the best move I ever made in my life.
Anything that strikes you as a memory from those days at Beekman or Bellevue, cases, people that came in, it just surgeries you did, anything that comes to mind?
Well, because I was chief for 2 years, I got to pick up all the surgery I wanted to do. So I got to do all the tough and hard cases and as many as I wanted to do. And that was nice. You could go on for hours and hours about which was most interesting. It was all interesting to me.
Well, you told me once you were at a conference, was it at Cornell or Harvard, where they were talking about how many people had done cases where there was either a stabbing or a shooting and there was an issue with the kidney, where there...
How many people have done splenectomy, removed spleens? Now that we repair them, we don't have to remove them because of new technology and blood control. Most people would raise their head, I've done two, I've done three, I've done four. And I got around about 30 or 40, I raised my hand. And I said, what are you, a trauma, are you a military surgeon? I said, no, I work in Lower Manhattan at Beekman Hospital. We see a lot of trauma. That's why I went down there. So I've had a lot of experience in trauma surgery that most surgeons never see.
You know. So what kind of trauma would you get that would create that? Are these gunshot wounds? Are these stabbings?
Just about everything. Falling down elevator shafts, car accidents, plane crashes. And these were multiple system injuries. Colon, abdominal, chest, thoracic, heart, lung, extremities, fractures, head. Multiple system injuries, which are very challenging. You have to attack each one in its order to have a live patient. So some things you would put off the next day, like a lacerated face or whatnot, or a broken leg. Why? Because if they got a ruptured spleen, that has to be attended, or a lacerated liver. Those things are more important.
Didn't you actually work on some innovative surgical techniques with the spleen where you could save them?
As a matter of fact, I did. I developed a couple of techniques of my own to not have to remove the spleen by repairing it. And I repaired four or five of the spleens that I did not have to remove. And that was, at the time, I didn't publish it. But at that time, most people who tried that had to later to go back and take the spleen out because it continued to hemorrhage. And I had some techniques that I developed with the new surgical drugs and Surgicel and things that were now available to me. And I had a chance to do that at Beekman because we saw so much splenic injury.
So if you came up today, what would be the difference? I mean, obviously you have so much modern technology that's changed surgery. I mean, they might think you were practicing in the dark ages. I mean, you weren't, but what's the differences for the listeners out there between when you were working from 1958 until the 1990s, so your 30, 40-year career versus today?
Yeah. Well, there are a number of new innovative techniques. Laparoscopy is one of them. That's a great, great advance to avoid making big abdominal incisions to get in to someone's abdomen to repair things. There have been a great number of innovations. But most of what I did was what we used to call trench warfare surgery. You're right down in the gutter with the worst of it. And not much of that has changed. With all the new techniques, you still have to do it the old-fashioned way. Get in there up to your elbows and, you know, blood and guts.
I mean, you often told me it was very important to be calm and to know your anatomy.
Yes. Fortunately, I was well-trained. My ability to draw was a great asset in anatomy, by learning anatomy. Because when I look at something, I don't see it in a flat plane. I see it in three dimensions, which most all artists do. So it was a godsend to have that ability with learning anatomy.
So you're saying, as a surgeon, for folks listening, that your artistic skills and your love of the arts actually helped you be a surgeon?
Certainly did. Absolutely. And I used to do a lot of medical illustrating on the side to make a few bucks when I was a resident. Didn't get paid much. I would do medical illustrating, and that helped too.
I like how you've described that you made it easier for the patients to understand what they were going through by showing them drawings.
Yes. When I had a patient who knew he could have surgery, I could draw this operation for them in great detail at their level so they could understand it. And that helped me reach the patient, and I think it helped the patient have some confidence in who they had as a doctor, that I could draw for them exactly what – that they could understand it. What I'm going to do and why. That was a great help to me.
You also talked about the importance of bedside manner. So I remember we've had many discussions over the years about A-plus students, doctors that got A's in medical school, but perhaps C's, D's, or F in bedside manner, and the importance of touching a patient and having that bedside manner for palliative care and to bring people back.
Very important. That's one thing my father taught me, is that you've got to make contact with the patient, and that's why a doctor touches you, because laying on of hands is very important. When a doctor takes your pulse, he doesn't care what your pulse is. He read it in the chart when he walked on the floor, when he looked at your chart. He takes your pulse so he can touch you. It's very important, making contact with the patient. And laying on the, it's called laying on the
pain. Do you ever remember a case where you really turned a patient around by doing that?
Right now I can't. There's so many things in my mind.
But you knew that actually it worked.
I know it works, yes. Many patients look at doctors as being sort of high and mighty and distant and aloof. It brings you closer to the patient, makes you more human. When grandma hugs you, it's the same thing.
Well, we're going to be back and close with you, Dr. Russell, after the break.
You're listening to On the Porch with Randy Voller, made possible by VRC Limited. Welcome back to On the Porch. Randy Voller and his friends bringing local flavor with zesty conversation. Come on up and grab a chair.
And we're back on the air on the porch with Dr. Russell, and it's great to have you here. I also have in here our producer for the show, which happens to be Doc Russell's daughter, Leslie.
Hi, everybody.
So if people were wondering who that female voice was that came in and asked the question, that was Leslie.
It's me.
And Leslie, if folks want to get on the show, you do all the booking. How do they get in touch with you?
Yes, I'm happy to do that. I'd love to hear from people who have compelling stories to share. Please give us a call or email me at llgraphicdesign@gmail.com.
Well, we'd love to hear from you folks. You can get in touch with Leslie if you have someone that you think should be a guest on the show. So, Doc Russell, we're here at the end here. We have a couple questions for you. You know, what are your greatest accomplishments and greatest regrets as you're almost 95 looking back?
Well, I think my greatest accomplishments is raising, I think, seven wonderful children. I've been very fortunate. I have, I think, seven great kids. I'm proud as the devil of all of them. They're all exceptional, each in his own manner. That, I think, is one of my great accomplishments. And I'm not that alone. I've been married more than once. My wife, their mothers, have been a big factor in that. I was busy working. They were a big part of raising those children. That I'm very proud of. Many of my friends have a lot of problems with their kids. I have not had that, which I think is very
so even though you saved many, many lives and you had a tremendous career as a doctor and it afforded you the ability to do some amazing things like sail in the Trans-Pac, and of course you're a very accomplished sailor, your greatest accomplishments are the fact you have these seven children. So family was number one is what you're saying.
Well, that's one of a number of things, but that's one of my greatest, I think. I feel very strongly about it, and I'm very happy. And I feel very lucky and blessed that I've had such an awfully good life.
So how about your greatest regrets? If you could rewrite the script, what's your greatest regret?
You know, sounds a little stupid, but I don't really have any great regrets to tell the truth. I made an awful lot of mistakes, and I've learned from those mistakes in my lifetime. But that's part of living.
So how do you advise as a doctor for folks to handle failure? When they make mistakes, what should they do?
Never give up. Never give up. Always just stay the course. You decide what you want to do. Never give up. My father used to tell me, if you set your mind to something and you really want to do it, don't give up. You can do it.
So perseverance is the key, is what you're saying. The ability to persevere, to keep at it.
Persevere. Absolutely.
You know, Benjamin Disraeli said, success is the constancy of purpose.
Yep.
And that's exactly what you're saying.
Now, talk about virtues. Benjamin Franklin was writing to have a new virtue in his life every day. And I've always thought the one virtue that's the most important of all, discipline.
So what's the secret, Frank? What's the secret, Doc Russell, here to living to 95? People want to know.
Well, I think good genetics certainly helps. I've done my share of hell-raising, pardon the expression.
Yes.
But I've basically taken care. I don't do dangerous things. Probably the most dangerous was to sail to Hawaii on a small sailboat many years ago.
But, well, you were a sailor. You did fly planes, which are known to kill doctors.
And I gave those things up, not the sailing, but the flying I did. But I think that you have to recognize your own limitations. And don't be cavalier about life. Be careful. Plan your life carefully. If you don't, you'll get lost in the woods, because life is walking through the woods. If you don't know where you're going, you get lost very quickly.
So your secrets are perseverance, be careful, know what your limits are, and family.
Discipline.
Well, this has been Randy Voller on the Porch with Dr. Frank H. Russell. It's been great to have you here, Frank.
My pleasure. I've enjoyed it tremendously.
We're going to bring you back for a future show.
You've been listening to On the Porch with Randy Voller on 97.9 The Hill. Catch episodes on demand at chapelboro.com/ On the Porch.